Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, anyway, are we rolling, Jamie?
We are rolling. Chuck, can you say, how's your water?
My water is refreshing. It's delicious.
We like to go a little bit heavy on the minerals here in public radio. Anyway, hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab, and today...
Still talking about football.
Yes, sir.
This is the second half.
And, you know, in the first half, we talked about where football came from. Now we want to look at where it's going, which seems to be the big conversation these days. And as we were thinking about that, we ended up talking with one of our favorite sports writers, Chuck Klosterman.
I'm a writer and a journalist in Brooklyn.
You may know him from his ethicist column in the New York Times. He also writes about sports for Grantland. And he recently wrote an essay about football and its inherent contradictions. And it recalled for us this sort of Carlisle versus Ivy, free flow versus traditional sort of thing, but in a newer sort of modern way.
Mm-hmm. Hey, can I ask you, so you're, I want you to explain this statement. This is the thing I found most interesting about your essay. You say basically that by portraying itself as a super conservative, traditional, manly sport, but essentially operating as the opposite, like this really liberal, wide-open, anything-goes kind of sport, football became the most successful enterprise in American sports history. So you have this sense that it's pretending to be one thing but actually another. What do you mean?
Well, okay, it's a unique thing in the sense that if you look at a sport like soccer or baseball, there is a real sense from the people who sort of, you know, the institution of the sport to keep the sport the same. That they want the sport to sort of almost transcend time, to be the same game now as it always is. Soccer particularly, they hate any kind of attempt to change the rules in this. Football works in the exact opposite way. Football is constantly evolving and constantly adopting new ideas and new technologies and is very willing to alter the game in order to make it a more free-flowing or a more progressive game. I mean, football will add things like coaches can talk to the quarterback through a radio in their helmet.
It has been determined that the receiver did not maintain.
You know, the idea of instant replay was added very early on compared to other sports. The game itself, from an offensive perspective,
they do it pretty fast, can't they?
Is constantly being reinvented.
Chuck says if you look at all the new formations that keep getting added, all the trick plays that are tried out every year, it is quite clear that football as a game...
It actually is the most liberal sport in terms of adopting ideas. But the morality of the game in the center of it, the thing that really draws people to love it, is sort of its almost most reactionary qualities. That it still sort of comes down to... strongest, toughest win. And this is why I feel like football is both so built for American, you know, the American way of thinking, and also so popular. It allows you to sort of think about the game in a very liberal, progressive way.
In a Carlisle way.
But spiritually, or like your heart of it, can still be this kind of old, comfortable, conservative mindset.
Those old Ivy fundamentals of power and might. In tradition.
I'm just kind of the belief that that's really what most people want. Most people want to think of themselves as progressive but feel conservative.
And Chuck's whole argument is that it is football's unique ability to be both at the same time, reactionary and simultaneously wildly inventive so that you can think about it one way and feel about it another. That is what makes football...
The most popular part of our sporting culture, which it is right now by... factor of three.
What he means is that the NFL is three times as popular as the next most popular sport in America. And the question we got to, just because it's a question you can't really avoid right now, is it going to stay that way?
Well, we're in such a weird era for the sport. Like, this is certainly in my lifetime the strangest era. Like, some weird things are happening. One is that
injuries after injuries.
There seems to be no limit to the amount that we can discuss the problems with the game.
Concussions in football.
If you're a coach, how do you handle all this discussion about neurologists and head injuries going forward?
The idea that so many former NFL players are essentially, you know, decrepit and...
My former center. A lot of head problems.
We study their brains after they die, and they have the brains of people who should have been 180 years old and had Alzheimer's or whatever, you know. There was just a kid from Ohio State who shot
himself.
In a dumpster.
Before he vanished, he sent a text to his mother saying, I am sorry if I'm an embarrassment.
And basically texted his mom and said it was like, I think it's concussions that are making me do this.
These concussions have my head all effed up.
And at the same time,
it is an American pastime.
There seems to be no limit to the popularity of the sport.
Sunday's game was the most watched event in American television history.
I think it's very plausible that the Super Bowl this year will be the most watched sporting event of all time.
In America, that is.
And this is a...
Wait, don't you feel a small, cold wind in the air? Like, strange.
I feel like...
I think all of a sudden,
feel
maybe...
like chimes of death are tolling or something.
Absolutely. Well, there's really never been a serious discussion about should we as a culture be playing football since...
Since Roosevelt, 1905.
Yes. And yet, no one seems to be stopping themselves from watching these games. So it's almost like there are these two silos...
Two separate streams in our collective unconscious.
That exist simultaneously and are both like shooting skyward.
Okay, so we got to be honest. Like when Chuck was talking about his whole idea of silos shooting skyward, cool idea, but we weren't really sure what that meant exactly.
Hey, man. It's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for letting me come down.
Of course.
There's so much more.
That is until our producer, Soren Wheeler, met this woman.
I'm Monet Bartel.
You could add something, like, if you want.
I'm Monet Bartel. I'm a Libra. I enjoy long walks on the beach. I'm just joking.
So Monet is a partner at a media production company. She lives with her husband and their four kids outside of Atlanta, Georgia. But I actually went to talk to her about her son, Parker, because Monet says the very moment he was born.
So what are you thinking when Parker's born?
As soon as the doctor saw his third thumb... I was like, yes, we're going to the NFL, baby. Yes. And then Parker's 10 pounds and 1 ounce. He's the biggest thing. He walked out the womb.
I'm still going with third
the
thumb.
Third thumb. That was the best way I could put it.
I hadn't heard that one before. All right.
So Parker comes out and he's the biggest thing I've ever seen. You know, I've prepared for months and I've found the perfect outfit to take him home from the hospital in, and this joker is too big for it. So right then I'm like, oh my God, yes.
Yes, like.
He's a boy.
And he's going to play in the NFL.
And he's going to play in the NFL. A lot of families pass down quilts. They pass down family businesses. Our family tradition was football. It was football. My dad played football.
The Lions' leading rusher was Mel Farr.
Her dad is Mel Farr. He was a running back for the Detroit Lions and actually rookie of the year in 1967.
His brother played football.
Miller Farr.
Your uncle.
My uncle.
Her brothers, Mel Farr Jr. and Michael Farr, both played football.
My cousin, Jerry Levias, who they...
And when we say played, these guys,
they all played in the NFL.
Okay.
Jerry Ball. I can't even, I said I was going to actually write them all down, but it's something like 33.
Really?
Family members have played in the NFL.
Oh my God.
Coming from a sports family, we had to play a sport. So I can remember getting up in the mornings before school, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning and having agility drills. We lived on the house.
Like just at home in your backyard?
Home. Yeah, in the backyard. We lived on a hill, and I didn't have it as bad as my brothers because I played tennis. I started playing tennis at 3. But like in the wintertime, my dad would strap my brothers to the sled, and my dad would sit in the sled, and they would have to run up the hill with my dad in the sled.
Oh, my God.
Tire drills, everything.
Do you have a sense of, like, why?
I think for my dad... Sports opened up so many doors for him. My dad's from Beaumont, Texas. He was in Texas at a very, you know, during segregation. So sports allowed him to get out.
Yeah.
It allowed him to provide an excellent lifestyle for his family. And being drafted to the Detroit Lions and being a football player in the Motown era, weekends at my house consisted of... Marvin Gaye and Lynn Barney and Charlie Sanders, who are all in the Hall of Fame now. My father actually and Lynn Barney sang background on Marvin Gaye's What's Going On.
No.
Yes, they did. My dad has a gold record.
That's crazy.
And when he stopped playing football,
the continuing adventures of Mel Barr's superstar,
he opened up his first car dealership.
And then another and another. And for a time, the Mel Barr Auto Group was actually the largest African-American owned business in the country.
I mean, that's what football did for him. Football gave my dad a life.
So Parker,
if they had a toddler league, he'd have been in it.
So you start looking for leagues?
Absolutely. Like... We moved to Georgia when Parker was two. Mm-hmm. And I found one that started at four. And I'm like, ooh, just two more years. It was like a countdown. Oh my gosh, one more year. And when Parker turned four, I mean, I couldn't sleep the night before. I'm like, yes, tomorrow is the day. Parker has no idea what's going on. I go up there bright and early, first person in line. Here's my check. 4 years old, full on contact football at four.
With helmets,
pads, spring training.
Wow.
Parker had spring training, okay? He's going through the tires. He's four, okay? We don't even have team colors yet, but I'm there in what I feel like a team color should be. I'm there in Honolulu blue and silver, because that's Detroit Lions colors. Right. So this is just at spring training. Then we get to the actual team practice. They named him the Tank. He was just plowing through people. They're like, Tank, Tank!
And like the coaches and the coaches. Parents.
At first practice, I'm not thinking about the other parents and their little normal-sized children and the fact that after the first day of practice, three kids quit because Parker had just plowed them over. I'm like, yes, my son is a beast!
And then the season starts.
Football in where we live is huge. At 4 years old, they were tailgating. No, I'm serious. The coaches had matching outfits. They had headgear. I'm like, are you kidding me? You guys are talking on microphones? And I'm like, wow, this is freaking serious. And the coaches are cursing. Like, you guys are playing like a bunch of I'm like, whoa, they're four. They don't even know what that is.
Wow.
It's that serious.
Are you starting to think, this is ridiculous at any point? Or is just they were...
I'm like, this is ridiculous.
Monet says she knew that. But when Parker's team would take the field...
Ha ha, hoo hoo, go fight, win.
Didn't matter.
You know, the proudest moment as a parent, my son gets a personal foul. I know, it's terrible. My son just tackles this guy. And the coach, you know, he would always say, make them eat dirt. So after he tackled him, my son took his head and was like, eat dirt. And I'm like, ah. And I had to keep myself down.
Because the kid who's eating, mom who
right,
ate dirt.
I'm like, I'm sorry. So at that evening is when I realized, I'm like, gosh, if my son was just attacked by a 65-pound four-year-old, I'd probably be a bit upset. Well, so this is a progression. This is, okay, they've got the matching outfits. Okay, they eat dirt. And then you go home and you reflect on the day. And I start to, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, what about this kid's mom? But then we get to the Super Bowl. So I'm fanatic again.
The 4 or 5-year-old Super Bowl.
Yes.
Okay.
My son has a trophy it's probably 3 feet tall.
The crazy part is that as all this is happening, as Parker's taking the field with his 4 and 5-year-old teammates,
a family member had really, really started showing signs.
Signs of like...
Of CT?
Chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Which is what comes from like concussion.
Concussion after concussion.
Symptoms include memory loss, sometimes bouts of anger. In this case...
It was depression. It was... suicidal thoughts. It was everything.
Was it other family members saying, hey, have you noticed this? Or was it he himself saying, I don't feel right?
It was everybody else seeing it. It was getting phone calls like, hey, I need you to come get him because he's having dangerous thoughts.
Yeah.
And at that very time, knowing that, I went and signed my son up for football.
What's going on there?
Because that's what we do. It's almost like a split personality. registering him for football was just as natural as getting up every morning and brushing my teeth. Then you have the other half as a mother, daughter, niece of NFL athletes who sees what happens on the flip side.
And while Parker was playing, the part of her that did see what happens on the flip side, that part would campaign to raise awareness of CTE with other parents.
I was on a mission. I met with people. I was doing health fairs, helping create this pamphlet that would go out.
Meanwhile,
since Parker was playing, my dad now is affected.
Really? Your dad too?
My dad is now showing signs.
How old is he now?
My dad just turned 70. And, you know, I'm seeing it now with his speech, with his thought pattern. You know, running backs, what do? Man, you lead with the head. That was, you know, but I can't stop myself from wanting my son to play football. It's just the crazy. I can't even explain it. If he wanted to play, I would be out there. He would be at practice. You know, even who tosses the ball around with him in the yard, hoping that he'll fall in love with football? Me.
And as for Parker?
When I asked Parker how did he like the season, his favorite things were the trophy and the pizza party at the end. He had no desire. You want to play again next season? No. This past year, or last year, hey, Parker, do you want to play this year? No. I want to play soccer.
Would you bring up to, like, when would a next possible season be?
Well, registration is in June.
And this would be what kind of, he's eight?
Yeah. I don't want him to, if he decides to play the game, cool. If not, begrudgingly, but that's okay too. I don't want to force him to play, especially this early. So I stand firm on both sides of the debate.
You can't do that.
I know. That's what makes it ridiculous. I stand firm that children should not play football. I also stand firm that children should play football, that it's a great sport.
And her current solution to this quandary?
He can be a kicker. So now we're out there. This year, we're dedicated to teach him how to kick. Maybe soccer's not such a bad idea.
Yeah, good practice for that. All the kickers came from soccer.
I'm like, what? There's no black kickers. There's no black punters.
Even the kicker gets hit every so often, though.
Every so often, but there is a stiff penalty for that. It was 15 yards. But
no. About this point in the conversation,
hey, handsome. I forgot that I'm not good. How was your day?
Parker came home from school.
Hi, Mr. Wheeler.
Hi, Mr. Wheeler.
Hey there, Parker. How you doing?
Good.
Good to meet you.
Okay, I'm not exactly sure how an 8-year-old should look, but he's a pretty big kid.
Come sit with me. Oh. I need to sit on your lap.
So do you know why I came to talk to you today?
Why?
Why?
You don't know why?
Oh, about football?
Yeah.
I played for about 6 weeks, I think. Was that right?
Something like that.
Because you just weren't really that into it?
No, I just still... the only reason I don't want to play it anymore is because I made someone swallow dirt and, like, that stuff is kind of messing up my history and I don't want to get anyone else hurt.
Messing up your history?
Yeah, it's just messing up history in my life.
So. But, I mean, you could... Well, I don't know what that means. What does that mean, that's messing up...
It's like messing up... It's making me have bad memories. I want to have good memories. And I kind of made someone swallow dirt. Man, I feel guilty. It was an accident. I just tackled him and then it happened.
Did you feel bad about it right away or you just feel bad about it now when you think back on it?
I feel bad about it every time I think back.
Really?
Yes. I thought I heard somebody crying or something. I thought I heard tears or I saw them.
So you didn't like doing that?
Yeah.
Do you like watching football?
No, I'm not that into football like the rest of my family.
Why not?
I usually think about just having fun and not winning.
Where'd you get that? Is that from your mom?
No, I just know that. Winning's just for people trying to be better than everyone and bullying.
Winning is for winners.
No, like, mom, that's what I mean. It's trying to have fun, not just to be rude to people. When you win, all you're going to do is, like, take a trophy and say you're better than them. It's not fair to the others.
Do you like other sports? Or you don't really care about that either?
I really want to do synchronized swimming.
Really? Is that true?
Where did you come from?
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mostly because when I saw something about it, it looked kind of cool, like... people were doing a lot of cool swimming tricks, so I kind of thought it was something for me.
You're playing me.
It's true. Really, I want to do synchronized swimming.
You're like, this guy's going to come talk to me about football, and I'm going to tell him that I want to do synchronized swimming.
Right.
No, you like it?
Yeah, it sounds kind of good.
He likes to swim, so he said swimming. But I guess we don't have to worry about that.
Well, that would be a team sport.
Yeah.
So...
Wow, this is kind of exhausting.
Yeah. It's all right. We can stop.
Thanks to Monet and Parker Bartel for letting Soren invade their home and exhaust them on short notice. And by the way, when Monet went back and counted all the relatives that had been in the NFL, it wasn't 33. It was 13. But that's still, it's a lot. In any case, here's a logical question that we felt like we should ask at least somewhere in this show. Given Tank's experience... You know, where football was practically his birthright, but he is opting out. Are there a lot of tanks out there? Like, is football the sport tanking nationally, generally? We asked Molly Webster to find out.
It's funny. One of my friends, we call him Tank, but that's because he can drink a lot. And my dad can't remember his name. He just goes, "How's Tank? How's that Tank fellow? Still drinking a lot." In any case, I started making some calls. The high school coaches, hey, can you hear me? Winning teams, losing teams.
Yep.
Oh, sweet. And to kind of get a handle on the bigger picture, I called this guy.
Ryan Marcellus Wallerson, and I am a freelance sports reporter. I don't know, would you want to name the places where I...
No, we'll keep it short.
Okay, so then, yeah, just a name and freelance sports writer.
Okay, so in 2013, he was an intern at the Wall Street Journal's sports desk.
In my first week, a article was published on ESPN that suggested, based on solely Pop Warner youth football numbers.
Hey.
By the way, Pop Warner is no longer the person Pop Warner, but he is a youth football league.
Yeah. Based on solely Pop Warner youth football numbers, youth football was declining, you know, pretty significantly.
Oh, do you remember what the drop was?
Yes, around 5% a year between 2010 and 2012.
When people saw these numbers, they were like, oh my God.
Why exactly? 5% doesn't sound too bad.
Well, I mean, if you assume that the 5% drop doesn't change, that's what it drops by every year, then in 15 years, you're in the neighborhood of like 50% less kids playing ball.
Wow.
Well, if this is true, it spells the end of football.
The idea is if you don't have the kids getting trained in like Pop Warner, then they're not going to middle school football, they're not going to high school football, and they're not going to college football, so they're not going to the NFL.
Right.
Needless to say, everyone was like, oh my God, is this actually true? Or is there more to these numbers than meets the eye? So Ryan starts digging into them.
See if I couldn't find the context to put them in.
And he doesn't look just at Pop Warner numbers. He looks at all the youth football leagues.
And what I began to realize was that the drop wasn't as drastic, but that there was indeed a drop.
But it's not as big as everyone was saying.
All right.
Okay.
Your relief will be short-lived. Because there's a bigger story. When Ryan looked at participation across all youth sports, not just football,
I came back with noted drops in all of the biggest youth sports.
It's not just that football's, everything's decreasing?
So nothing was rising except for lacrosse and for hockey.
Huh.
Wow.
So we had our headline, kids aren't playing sports. You know, football gets all of the attention. Football gets all of the controversy. You don't really hear about basketball or soccer or baseball. So you don't have any reason to think that those sports aren't still as healthy as they've always been. But then when you go and look, you see a drop that is comparable to the drop in the sport that's got everybody's hair on fire, and you just wonder why this has been going on so silently.
Is this an extension of the whole concussion thing?
Yes, concussions were definitely part of the conversation, but so were, you know, budget issues and kids specializing in sports and getting burnt out. Basically, everyone had their reasons, and every school has their reasons. But the guys I talked to,
and you know,
they just kept coming back to land on this point that had nothing to do with safety.
You know, the bottom line, if today, if a kid doesn't like the score, he just hits restart. He just starts the game over.
Because they can get on a video game. They can play, they start losing, they hit reset.
Hit the button and play another game.
They just hit a button and start over.
That's JT Curtis, JJ Woodward, and George Salas. They're in Louisiana, California, and Kansas. And I heard this refrain not just from them, but I heard this in Ohio, I heard this in Michigan. And by this point, I was like, Jesus.
You know, that's the problem.
It's funny because it's as if all the coaches all across the nation are reading the same book or going to the same bar or something because... And literally everyone I've talked to has brought this up. Is it just that everyone said it to each other so much that
I can tell you that's not it at all.
Okay.
It's because we all deal with the problem.
So all these coaches I talked to were like, you can't go hit reset. You can't hit reset. You can't hit reset. Like, these kids are used to, like, I sound so old. They're basically saying that what they find is they feel like there's some commitment issue now.
I only play if I win. I only want to win.
Yeah, so the interesting thing was is the coaches I talked to at the powerhouse schools were like, well, we're not actually having trouble getting kids because we win. But the other schools in their conference, they know that coaches and athletic directors, and then I talked to some schools that had forfeiting teams that ended up forfeiting games. They said, like, you just don't get the kids that will work their asses off and ride the bench.
Well, everybody wants to win. It's just somehow it seems like they expect to win or it isn't worth the effort.
Or it's just saying that there are so many options. Like, why would you choose the losing option?
Tell you what, when I used to go home after school, I turned the TV on, and there's three channels. That's all I had. And they usually were showing soap operas. And so there was really no reason. I had no reason to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go home, there's 150 stations you can find something you want to watch, or you get out a game.
All right, so whether you think it's video games or parenting or fear of concussions or whatever reason you want to choose, it seems to be the larger thing that happens in these conversations about sports like football, is that it doesn't actually seem to be about football. It's like some kind of negotiation between the generations. Because, like, back in the 1870s, the Harvard kids, they were using football as a way to say back to the previous generation, like, look how tough we are. Look how manly we are. Maybe this generation is turning away from sports like football also to say something back to the previous generation. Something about the world they want to live in.
Sports do suggest things about society and about reality that we are slowly trying to remove from existence.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that somehow physicality matters more than the mind, and that people really aren't equal, and that if you yell at someone and challenge their manhood, that's awful.
I mean, overt masculinity of any kind, it's not something that we're in the mood to celebrate these days. So it could be, if you believe writer Chuck Klosterman, and it could be that some kids are choosing away from sports like football because to play football it means that on some level you have to support or at least entertain ideas that you don't like, you know, or at least that you don't want to admit that you like. Except he admits it.
I do think there's something unconscious about me that is drawn to the problems in the game that are based around what it really is, which is
two dudes slamming into each other.
Yes. Because, you know, I mean, okay, this is like I guess I'm doing pop psychology on myself. But
which you are fully entitled to do because it's fascinating.
But I sometimes wonder if somehow part of me misses that from my life. That, you know, that my life is built around sitting at a computer and avoiding conflict and basically thinking about things and going on the radio and talking about what they might mean, you know, and sort of like, what are they metaphors for? What is this culture? What is it telling us? You know, and that perhaps football allows me to sort of even though I'm not playing it, I'm just watching it. But somehow by watching it, it allows me to tap into something that is no longer part of my life because my mind has trained me not to want it. My mind knows not to look for conflict. Now, I suspect that I was socialized to believe that that would be a positive, exciting thing. Absolutely. I mean, I talked about sports with my father more than we talked about every other thing we ever talked about. I had a great relationship with my dad. He passed away. I mean, I loved him. We had a great relationship. But we definitely spent more time discussing sports than I would say every other thing that we discussed, even though he would always say, like, the most important thing. I'd come home from whatever, you know, and he would be like, so how was school today? And I would tell him how school was briefly, and he would be like, well, you know, academics are the most important thing. And then we would talk about football practice for an hour. like you know, it's like that would, it would be, that would be, that would be, you know. So I realized that my relationship to football goes back to, you know, I have two older brothers, man. We spent so much time throwing the football around, and my brother, both my brothers were very good football players, and like one played at the college level and as a first grader. I was so proud of that, you know. I would tell, you know, and so there's all of these things that are I'm sure are creating obstacles for me seeing this clearly. And maybe the kind of person who's sort of like, this guy is crazy, that he's not seeing the obvious thing, that he is actually saying that we need to somehow find a moral justification for a game that's probably killing dudes for money. I don't know. It's not my fault. That's how I feel. I can't get around you, man. I'm sorry.
Wow, there you go. Yeah. I think that's
you good. Have two new messages. Message one.
Hi, this is Chuck Wilsterman.
This is Monet and Parker Bartel.
Hi, this is Kath Curtis calling. I have a bit of a cold, so here I go.
Radio Lab is produced by Jed
Abramrod. Our staff includes Ellen Horn, Soren Wheeler,
Tim Howard, Brenna Farrell,
Molly Webster, Melissa O'Donnell, Dylan Keefe, Jamie York,
Lynn Levy,
Andy Mills, Kelsey Padgett,
and Matt Kilty. With help from Ariane Wax, Joel Werner, Damio Marchetti,
Latif Nasser, Kelly Prime, and Danny Lewis. Radio Lab involves many staff members with names that are hard to pronounce.
Special thanks to Richard Tritt,
Tom Benji, Robert Wheeler, Jeff Miller, Fritz and Deborah Creedy,
Fred Wardecker, Joe Flood, Eric Anderson,
and the Cumberland County Historical Society.
Goodbye.
End of message.
Okay, we're back. One last thing. Okay, if you grew up on Inside the NFL, as I did, this is for you. It's The Voice.
Using the Chicago players crowded along the sideline as a shield, Exendine circled the bench and started running again. Behind the line of scrimmage, Hauser launched the ball 40 yards downfield. Exendine darted back onto the field, all alone near the Chicago goal. For a moment, it was a frozen scene in a stage drama. The ball hung in the air, a tantalizing possibility. Could Exendine reach it? Would he catch it or drop it? Defenders wheeled and stared downfield. Spectators, watching from the stands, found that the breath had died in their collective throats. The spiraling ball seemed to defy physics. What made it stay up? When would it come down? In that long moment, 27,000 spectators, mashed together on benches and crammed on platforms, may have felt their loyalty to the home team evaporate in the grip of a powerful new emotion. They may have noticed something they never had before, that a ball traveling through space traces a profoundly elegant path. They may have realized something else, that it was beautiful. The ball struck its human target. Exendine caught the pass all alone and trotted over the Chicago goal line. The stadium exploded in sound and motion. On the Chicago sideline, coaches and players screamed with outrage. On the field, the referee signaled the score. But in the stands, the spectators marveled. the crowd held its breath in amazement for a time, then stifled its local pride and turned loose its enthusiasm and cheered for the Indians, the Chicago Daily Tribune reported. It was the game breaker. The rest was just anticlimax. The final score was 18-4 for Carlisle. The long pass had arrived in Chicago, although by a circuitous and out-of-bounds route. The Indians, declared the Tribune, had given such an exhibition of its possibilities as will not soon be forgotten in that vast throng.
That was Mr. Scott Graham, voice of Inside the NFL. Thank you, Scott. You are the awesomest voice ever. And that was original music by Dylan Keefe. Bye.